seriously popular.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In today's episode...
Why England's defeat to Brazil was no bad thing.
Do Wales really deserve a playoff shot?
We talked to Jay Bothroyd about his secret epilepsy struggle.
I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Chris, I saw a video last night on the FA's social media feed of Gareth Southgate handing out caps to the new players who just made their debuts for England this weekend, Kobbie Mainoo and Anthony Gordon and people like that. And it struck me that that is a huge moment in a player's career. They really looked humble and almost overcome by the enormity of it. And I know I do joke with you that you've only got one, but you have got one. Just tell me what that feels like when you play for your country for the first time.
Extremely proud. That's what, you know, growing up as a youngster, little village just outside Norwich, I wanted to play professional football and I wanted to play for my country. So my cap was against Cameroon, 15th of November, 1997. Still etched that date in my memory. And no, very proud moment, and I wanted more. Unfortunately, I got one. And I'm often the butt of your jokes for just having one.
It's one more than that. One more than I've got. I just mentioned it because I watched it last night. It just struck me that lots of things change in football: money, circumstances, the profile of players. But some things don't change. And I think when you play for your country, just looking at Anthony Gordon in particular, he just looked rather overwhelmed by it. And
he said it was the best day of his life.
He did.
I would have to say getting married was the best day of my life, because my wife listens to the pod.
Sam listens to this. You've got to say that. And buying each of your 12 horses was the other 12 best days of your life. Anyway, look, England lost to Brazil, as we know, in their friendly on Saturday night. They lost 1-0. Part of me is a little bit glad about that.
What?
And that sounds weird.
No.
Sounds weird, because I just think when you're on a run-in to a major tournament, things can get you, and the things that can get you are complacency, overconfidence, hype. And I'm not accusing any of those players of being complacent or overconfident, but there is a bit of hype around. That's not their fault. They can't affect it.
That's your fault.
I just think when you have a little setback, it just levels everything off. It keeps everything it dampens down everything, and it allows them just to carry on and prepare and build. Don't get me wrong, mate. I don't want them to lose the last two friendlies before they go to Germany in the summer. I absolutely don't. But at the moment, little reality check, does no one any harm.
I know what you're saying, but it's not better that they lost and the players can't.
I wasn't dancing around the living room.
Think that way. I think I'm sort of turning you a little bit into sort of
the misery.
Yeah. into this different mindset.
Grumpy little man.
And law of averages as well. I'm always one for those.
What do you mean?
Well, if they lose now, then maybe they won't in a major tournament. But look, I think it's more about the performance than anything. And I thought it was all a bit flat. I've got to say, I'm not one who would have got too excited had England won the game comfortably. On the flip side of that, I'm not getting too stressed about the fact that England lost. I thought that they were flat on the evening. I thought defensively anybody watching that game would be really, really worried. That would be my biggest take on it. I thought Anthony Gordon did pretty well. Ollie Watkins, I actually thought, was okay in the game. But no, the centre-half pairing really struggled. Those movements in behind, you know, Vinicius Jr., were causing England all sorts of problems. And Brazil should have won by more.
Now, that's interesting, because that is always my slight fear about England, is that because the way international football works, you don't get to play the top-notch opposition that often. You really only usually get to play them once a tournament starts. The Nations League has helped a little bit with that, but generally you only play the big teams when a big tournament comes around once every 2 years. And I do still wonder sometimes if, when really good players get between our midfield and get onto our back four, that is our weakness. And I do think that is one of the reasons why Gareth Southgate, as criticised as he is, still has that preference for two holding players. I just wonder if he sometimes fears about what happens when teams get onto our back four. Mm. And that's what Brazil did a little bit.
I think so. I mean, but so the early chance where Vinicius Jr. Should have scored, Kyle Walker, you know, tried to play him offside. He made that run in between Walker and Stones. The timing of the pass was excellent. The timing of the run was excellent. Walker eventually got back, and then he actually, when he retrieved the ball, smashed the ball off Harry Maguire's head, didn't he? Which had pretty much summed up England. No, I think, look, they played against, you know, really good opposition. It was pretty eye-opening how many times Brazil got in behind England. It wasn't a one-off. They got the, you know, of course they scored from a 1v1 situation. Pickford made a decent save. But all in all, you know, I'm not going to get too het up about England losing a friendly game, which is what it was.
Yeah. Now, Brazil kicked Jude Bellingham around a little bit. Quite physical, the way they went after him. I think we can be quite confident that in game one of the Euros in the summer, Serbia will probably get after Jude Bellingham a little bit. He is our...
Oh, the Serbians,
He is our best player. Bit of kind of lazy generalisation for
me. Well, the Serbs, they're a bunch of cloggers.
But it is possible. It's possible that they might see that as a tactic.
They'll pay him close attention. Yeah. Why?
Now,
I wonder.
So, have you seen anything in Jude Bellingham that may lead you to think that he may not deal with that well?
No, I think that he was querying the referee on a number of occasions when not just he was fouled, but England players were fouled. But, you know, it's a feather in your cap if the opposition are paying you close attention. And something which, look, he would have had to deal with in La Liga, and he'll have to deal with it at international level. But there's nothing in his temperament which really suggests that that he's one who is you know, going to lose his head on a regular basis. I don't want to be a Jonah and say that, you know, he will never lose his head, because, you know, he might. But he, you know, he seems to have a very good temperament for one so young.
Because there's one thing that will do you in a major tournament, as we found to our cost in the past, and that is retaliation. International referees will not stand for it. So I just think there'll be a couple of occasions where he might have to take a deep breath in the Euros. And I just hope that he's at an age of maturity where he can do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's a wait and see until, you know, until he, you know, absolutely loses his head, then we can, you know, come to that. At this moment in time, I think that he looks, you know, he looks pretty measured, fine and on top of things.
Talking of players withdrawing from squads, England have lost a few now off the top of my head. Walker, Maguire, Saka, now Sam Johnston. I think I've missed somebody out as well. There's a little bit of a conspiracy theory doing the rounds on social media from Arsenal fans who've been noticing the number of Manchester City players who are not with their countries. Obviously, Arsenal and Manchester City play each other at the Etihad on Easter Sunday, another title-deciding game. And Arsenal fans have noticed that Edison, Kevin De Bruyne, Kyle Walker, Erling Haaland, Ruben Diaz, Bernardo Silva, none of those are with their countries right now. I'm not suggesting anything's afoot.
Well, you are. Well, you are because you brought it up.
I'm just reporting what some Arsenal fans are talking about on social media. Although having said that, you know,
Saka, but do you? Yeah, do you think Saka will be fit? I've got a feeling.
You never know. He could be. Now, look, between now and England's game against Belgium at Wembley kicking off tomorrow night, there'll be team news, there'll be discussions, there'll be selection debates. Our chief football reporter, Sammy Rockbell, will be all over those. I've said it before. Nobody knows. I sometimes wonder if Sammy knows what the England team's going to be before Gareth Southgate knows what the England team is going to be. He said on the back of the Daily Mail print edition and on Mail Online this morning that Ivan Toney is likely to start against Belgium. Follow Sammy on X. Follow him on Instagram. He'll give you what you need to know. He'll let you know who's...
TikTok?
He'll let you know. I'm not sure. Sammy would be great on TikTok. Daily Mail, Mail Sport, TikTok now has 1 million followers, by the way. 1 million followers. Daily Mail Sport, Mail Sport TikTok. Make sure you across that. But yeah, Sammy will tell you who's playing. Sammy will tell you who's injured, who's not, etc.
Do you want England to win against Belgium or just a bore draw? What do you want with this at the reverse psychology?
Oh yeah, I mean back-to-back defeats would be a disaster, absolute disaster, absolute catastrophe. That lose to Belgium as well. Now, former England manager Sven Göran Eriksson, as we know, sadly, has terminal pancreatic cancer. There was a lovely interview that Channel 4 did with Sven at his home. Steve Bowett did it. It was shown on the television before the game at the weekend. Tributes paid to Sven from some of his old England players, Stephen Gerrard, Paul Scholes, Gary Neville, Owen Hargreaves, Michael Owen, moving stuff. Sven was also at Anfield on Saturday, fulfilling a lifetime ambition to be a manager at his boyhood club. There was a Legends game taking place. Sven was in charge. I'm fond of Sven. I dealt with him when he was manager of Manchester City. He didn't pick you for England, though, Chris, did he? Which doesn't stand out as one of your career highlights. There was a moment when you thought he was going to.
Well, there's a moment when he should have picked me. Playing for Celtic in the Champions League, I wouldn't often say that I come off a pitch thinking that I played well, but this particular night against Juventus, I scored 2 goals.
Champions League.
I ran them ragged. Sven was there to watch me. I don't know what game he was watching if he didn't pick me. But no, you know, with regards to his whole career and whatever, nothing but a great deal of admiration and respect for him.
Like I say, I dealt with Sven largely when he was manager of Manchester City, and quite a good manager of Manchester City, actually, just in that era before Abu Dhabi took over. Everybody remembers at City remembers Sven's warmth and his ability to charm, and I absolutely don't mind saying it because he was a single man, certain enthusiasm for the opposite sex. Sven spent his time in Manchester living in the suite on the top floor of the Radisson Hotel in the centre of Manchester, which he paid for himself. I think that suite went for $2,500 a night, although I'm sure he got a deal. So at the time, as journalists, we were asking people at City, why is Sven not living in a flat? Why is he not renting a house or something? And eventually, someone just said to him, look, I think what you need to understand about Sven is that his main priority is that his main priority for where he lives is that people are allowed to come and go from the house without necessarily being seen or recognised, if you get my drift. Paid for everything in cash, Sven. He was absolutely paranoid about the English media because of the way he felt he'd been treated when he was manager of the national team. Never used his credit card because he was terrified of credit card trails. Paid everything in cash. And there was someone who worked at Man City who used to keep some of Sven's cash at his house and bring it to Sven when he needed cash. And the reason that Sven was so concerned about the English media, the English news media more than the football guys and girls, it was his private life that he didn't want on the front of the newspapers. And you know why? The only people he worried about was his parents. He didn't like the thought of his parents finding out what he was up to. So there we go. So Sven-Göran Eriksson, he was back in the dugout at Anfield at the weekend. We wish him well. If you haven't seen that mini documentary that preceded the England game of the weekend, then go and check it out because it's absolutely lovely. Now, look, last week we did a little five-a-side. Favourite five last-minute winning goals. And there's a few that we missed out. Peter John Wayne on Spotify says, you forgot Guy McAllister's 93rd-minute derby winner for Liverpool in 2001. I remember that one well. Rad DXB on Spotify mentions Lucas Moura's last-minute goal for Spurs against Ajax.
I was there.
2019 Champions League semi-final. Sean Cox, of course, says Jimmy Glass. How could you leave out Jimmy Glass? The Carlisle goalkeeper scored in the last minute back in the day.
Enough.
And Crimson Shadow mentions a goal from another goalkeeper, Liverpool goalkeeper Alisson's 95th minute header against West Brom to make sure that Liverpool qualified.
We did miss one. Have you got the other one?
Which one?
Somebody made the point.
Oh, Michael Thomas. Yeah, Michael Thomas at Anfield to win the league. That was quite a big one.
I'll hold my hands up. That's a bad miss from Sutton.
Couple more general comments here. Sharky 1892 says, again, a load of scouse baiting nonsense from Ladyman. I'm starting to reassess my subscription.
Yeah.
Please stay with us. I'm not biased against Liverpool, am I? Am I biased against Liverpool?
I think at times.
And just to balance things out, Inner Tanezi 3 on Spotify says, more anti-United bias. So there we go. We're biased against Liverpool and Manchester United. Maybe we are. Now, England aren't the only team to be in action this week. There's some competitive international football to be played. Wales are at home to Poland in Cardiff on Tuesday night. They win that game and they qualify for the Euro. So are we all Welsh for the next couple of days, Chris? I'd like them to qualify.
Yeah, why wouldn't I like them to qualify? I like Rob Page. There was, not so long back, there were huge question marks over whether he should carry on in his current role. And I think that was from the Welsh FA, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
The most damning aspect of that. And he's sort of resilient, he's hung on in there, and they'll go into the game against Poland with great confidence. They blew away Finland, albeit Poland had a decent win against Estonia. Estonia had someone sent off early on in that particular game. But watching Poland at the last World Cup, they have some good players, but their best players are ageing, and that's going to be their issue. So, yeah, half fancy Wales.
Yeah, the Football Association of Wales are actually on record as saying that if Wales don't qualify for the Euros, and Robert Page will probably lose his job, which, there you go, motivation.
That's
for
nice.
Him. Now, let me say on record before I get into this, echo what you say about Robert Page. I've interviewed Robert at a lovely pub.
There's outside. A butt here, isn't there?
There's a huge butt coming. And I do wish him well. I really do hope they qualify. But, and this is the but, I'm not sure about the Euros qualification process. Just a little bit of background. Wales finished third in their qualifying group, behind Croatia and Turkey, but were pretty much always guaranteed a playoff position because of their Nations League performance. Now, I looked this up yesterday, and their Nations League performance comprised 5 defeats and 1 draw. They got relegated from Pool A into Pool B. How are they getting...
Who was the draw against?
How are they getting into the play? I wish I knew. I should know. How are they getting into the playoffs on the back of the Nations League performance, if that was a Nations League performance? And it's because most of the teams ranked above them in the Nations League standing, if not all of them, qualified for the European Championships through the traditional manner by finishing in the top 2 of their groups. And so because they all have already got into the Euros finals in the normal way, Wales get a playoff spot.
But that's not Rob Page's fault. That's not the Welsh team's fault.
It is not, but what's it rewarding? We're supposed to be talking about an elite football tournament. The European Championships, just like the World Cup, are supposed to be an elite football tournament. That's not elite. What that is essentially expanding the tournament from 16 teams, the finals, from 16 teams to 24, and just padding as many teams into the summer tournament as possible. Wales, and this is going to be very unpopular opinion, Wales do not deserve to be there.
I agree with you about padding tournaments out, and what is it about? Money. Of course, it's about money. But the Nations League thing, I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
So that's but they're in by default, and it's a bit of a wild card. But do you know what? Good luck to them.
So just for people who aren't following, essentially the normal European qualification campaign finishes in the top two in your group, you qualify. There are then a certain number of places reserved for playoff positions, but they don't use the qualifying groups to determine who gets in the playoffs. They use the Nations League performances. So here's another example, and this is mind-blowing, by the way. Mind-blowing. Estonia finished bottom of Group F in qualifying. They got 1 point.
That's good for them.
They got 1 point. They got into the playoffs above the two teams who finished above them in their qualifying group because of their Nations League performance. In Group J, five of the six teams in Group J either qualified for the tournament automatically or got into the playoffs because of their Nations League performance. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. What's the point of having qualifying groups if you don't pay attention to them and you don't use them to work out who gets in the playoffs?
But they're using the nation.
Are you with me here?
No, I'm
sorry. Are you following?
I'm losing the will to live a little bit. But no, but so they, yeah, so they're,
it's
they're
mental.
It doesn't add up, but it does add up.
It doesn't add up at all.
It's not right. I agree with what you're saying.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And a serious point is there are two schools of thought here. When we're talking about expanding tournaments, you know, the World Cup's getting bigger, as we know. The next World Cup will be the biggest there's ever been in terms of number of teams. The Euros used to be six, well, it used to be eight, then it was 16, now it's 24. Now, some people on the other side of the argument will say to me, it's great for these tournaments, for these smaller nations getting into tournaments. Gives them an opportunity to play, gives them an opportunity to learn. What I say is that it gives them the temptation to be comfortable. And then if they know they're going to get in, what encourages them to improve their coaching infrastructures, to improve their academies, to improve their domestic leagues, if they already know that they're going to be given a huge leg up to get into the summer tournaments where they'll make money from TV rights and all the rest of it? Where's the encouragement to get better if they know they're always going to get a shot at it regardless? And I have to say, and I will say again, for those who aren't following, I want Wales to win against Poland on Tuesday. I want Wales to be in the tournament. That doesn't mean that they...
Just imagine if they go on and win it.
Doesn't mean that they're necessary.
Goran Ivanisevic?
Wimbledon
qualifier. Wild card, 2001.
Tennis, yeah.
Maybe there's an omen there, albeit it's not Welsh.
Broke Tim Henman's heart, albeit he's not Welsh. Anyway, Poland are the opposition for Wales on Tuesday night, and the encouraging thing for Rob Page and his team is that they've only won twice away from home since 2020. One of those was at the Faroe Islands, and the other one was actually against Wales.
The other one was against Wales. The Faroe Islands, they're tricky on
yeah,
the day.
Yeah, the Faroe Islands will be in the finals before long. Now, Scotland did qualify by merit. Their qualifying campaign for this summer's European Championships was terrific. However, their form has subsequently fallen off a cliff. They've just got tubbed by the Netherlands. No win in six for Steve Clark's team.
Are you glad they lost?
Nope.
But you're glad England lost?
No, I'm absolutely not one of these English people who has a problem with...
No, but you're glad England lost. We're taking this a full circle. You're glad England lost, but,
yeah, but the Scots,
you're now going to give Scotland a kicking, are you?
Yeah, well, the Scots haven't won for six games.
Yeah, but who have they played in those six games?
They were terrible against England at home in the cauldron of Hampden Park.
But they'd actually produce when they needed to produce. You're judging Steve Clarke's team on one game.
Well, I'm saying, no, they've not won in six. Their form has fallen off a cliff since they qualified.
Did you watch the game against the Netherlands?
Absolutely not.
This might sound ridiculous.
Absolutely not.
This might sound ridiculous.
What was their XG?
But they actually had chances, and between the boxes, they actually played very well. They've got an issue in the centre-forward position. Lauren Shanklin played very well for Hearts this season, and that's a position which has been a problem at Shankland. Or
you think
Lyndon
he's a good
Dykes.
Player, don't you?
There's a good player, and there's international level, you know, top level, and they've got Shay Adams as well. So you'd say, with respect to them all at that level, they're probably just below it. But I would just look at the qualifying campaign as a whole. If I'm Scottish, I'm going into the tournament really bullish, you know, on their day. If you get some organised, they've conceded too many goals of late, and they've lacked a bit of balance. But, you know, concentrate on the qualifiers, not the friendly games where, you know, they have had tough tests at times and ended up on the wrong side of the result.
And I have to say, although they've got a rather daunting opening game, they do play in the first game of the tournament in Munich in June against the hosts, Germany. But Scotland's group, Germany, Switzerland, Hungary, that needn't terrify Steve Clarke's team at all. And remember, going back to the subject of bloated tournaments, some of the third place teams in the group stages will qualify.
So Switzerland and Hungary are just write-offs, are they?
See, that you're just being deliberately provocative.
No, I'm not that. I think that is ridiculously dismissive.
What I'm saying,
Switzerland and Hungary, they're rubbish because they're Swiss.
Didn't say that.
They're Hungarian.
How many?
Hungary have lost two games in 20. That is a team who are, you know, pretty well organised.
You look really pleased with yourself.
Switzerland.
You look really pleased with yourself.
I'm just saying, Switzerland, you know, they've got some good players.
No, this is one of the drawbacks of giving you sight the night before we do this podcast of things that I'm going to talk about.
Hungarians.
So you've gone straight onto the Swiss, the Hungarian FA's Wikipedia page, haven't you? And found that statistic. Go on, say it again. What is it?
They've lost two in the last 20 games and you are writing them off.
Yeah.
Shame on you. Yeah. Anybody listening in Budapest?
Yeah, but who've they played? Well, I'm saying
I'll tell you what they have done. They've beaten England twice.
Oh, no, that's a very good point.
The last two games, 4-0 and 1-0.
Yeah, but that was that version of England.
Not the England version who played at Hampden Park.
That was that version of England. Yeah. That was before Hollywood Jude got the bit between his teeth and turned us from mediocre to potential Euro winners in the summer. Okay, well, let's have a little break now from the international stuff because we've got a special guest with us in the studio today. Jay Bothroyd, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
We're very well, thank you. Now, most of you will know Jay for his time playing up front as a centre-forward for Wolves, Cardiff, played in Japan, several other clubs, and indeed once for England. So he's immediately doubled the amount of England caps we have in this studio. I'm now very much the odd one out, even more so than before. But Jay is not actually here to talk about that game against France in 2010, but the fact revealed just this weekend that he played his whole 23-year career without telling anybody he was epileptic. Jay told his story in a moving interview with Chris Cutmore, who also has a condition, in yesterday's Mail on Sunday. That terrific piece of sports journalism is still available on Mail Online and indeed the Mail Plus app, and I would very much recommend that you go and check it out. It was the most interesting and revelatory piece of journalism I read all weekend. And Jay is here with us this morning to talk about it. Jay, that's a heck of a secret to carry around during a playing career.
Yeah, it was one of those things, especially when I was younger. When I had my first one, obviously I was in my teens. So it was one of those ones where when I came around for my first seizure, I just asked the doctor, I said, can I die from this? And he was like, no. I said, can this affect my football career? And he was like, well, if not managed properly. So for me, I just kind of thought, you know what, I'm going to put this to the back of my mind and I'm just going to carry on as normal. And that's what I did. obviously they gave me my tablets and whatnot, but at the time I was just really kind of like, I've got no interest in this. I just want to play football. I want to enjoy it. It's never happened before. It might not happen again. But then obviously as I got older, you start playing more regularly. I started to have seizures more regularly. And then that's when I was like, okay, now I need to, you know, manage this better. I need to start taking my medication on time all the time. But then when you're young, it's like sometimes you go away and you forget it. So it was really difficult because obviously I kept it to myself as well. Like no one knew I had it. And then there was times when I'd play games and whatnot and I wouldn't feel great. I could kind of feel like it's difficult to describe, but my eyes weren't focused. I could feel like a blackness behind my eyes and I kind of knew it was kind of lingering. But at the same time, I just love football so much that I just was like, I want to do it. I'm going to play. So it was difficult, especially in those younger years.
Well, can I ask a question? What actually is epilepsy? You know, tell us the effect it had on you, because I don't know.
Well, for me, what it was when I had my first one, obviously I had all the neurological tests on my brain. I came around and they said, listen, you've got a scar at the front of your brain and that's what's causing your brain not to function like 100% of times. It was one of those things where it affected me because when you have a seizure, you're not aware that you've actually had one until you come around and someone tells you you've had one. And for me, obviously, I can't see it. It just happens. So it's really scary, like I said, for my wife, my kids at the time, my kids now, my mum and dad. It's really scary. But because I just thought, you know, I'm going to ignore this, I just kind of went about my football playing career. And even teammates, you know, there's only a handful of teammates that ever knew that I had it because I didn't have them at training and I didn't have them on the field, luckily. But obviously there were some that, you know, they might have come round afterwards or I might have spoke to them and they knew I had one and I'd be like, listen, don't say nothing, it's private. And then, you know, they respected my wishes.
So epilepsy affects about 1 in every 100 people in this country, although to varying degrees. About 1,000 people a year die from having epileptic fits in this country. Just tell us what your seizures were like. What happened to you when you were having an epileptic seizure?
So I can describe the ones as I got older better because obviously I was more aware of it and I paid more attention. But for example, for me, my seizures come about when I get lack of sleep. I don't take my tablets. You know, I might have had a few drinks. And then obviously my body's exhausted, which obviously football does to you. And that happened, you know, often, especially if I went out, you know, after a win, you know, Chris, as you do, especially if it's a big game, you might go out with your mates, come back in at like 3 in the morning and then be up at 8 and you're doing a recovery. So for me, that's when I was really susceptible to having them. And for me, it was more a case of I would feel that that blackness behind my eyes. My eyes weren't really focused. I felt like obviously exhausted. I just always felt like, okay, I just need to get home. I need to get my head down. I need to sleep. Because when you get that sleep, you know, you can avoid it. Obviously, you've got to hydrate as well. So as I got older, I learned to manage it. And I could start to feel when one was coming along, when I didn't feel quite right. And at that point, you know, I would just go into relax mode.
But you were also, correct me if I'm wrong, you were also having the full on kind of tongue biting seizures.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at. You were having those full on seizures.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was biting my tongue. I was having a seizure sometimes. Obviously, I was frothing. Obviously, sometimes you can have absent seizures, which last much longer. But most of my seizures has been that where it's like, one or two minutes.
The absent seizures
where like we might be speaking now and I just might be staring at you like nodding and I can hear what you're saying, but it just makes no sense to me. Like you could say, when's your birthday? And I'll be like, I'll make out as if I'm just bantering you or whatnot. Mm. Just to, so I look normal or I sound normal. But yeah, the absent seizures last longer. Like when I've had those, you know, day and a half, 2 days sometimes. Obviously, the seizures when I'm shaking and frothing and biting my tongue, they're like 1 or 2 minutes. But when you come around, you know, you don't realize what's actually happened. And those days when I have had them, like I played football matches a day after I had a seizure. I don't remember the football match at all.
And this is top level, elite level football. You are training, you are playing, you are, to everybody else's mind, you are fully functioning as a professional athlete on the back of these seizures, but also carrying this secret around with you, which I presume you didn't tell anybody at any of the medicals you had at clubs.
No, because it wasn't
teammates
asked.
Didn't know, managers didn't know.
No, exactly. They didn't ask. And the way I looked at it, you know, as you know, Chris, you know, you go into a club and you're discussing your contract. You don't want 1 year contracts. You want a longer, you don't want your 3 years, really, 3 and 4 year contracts. You want that security. And I just felt that if I said something, it might be one of those issues where, like, we'll give you a 1 year deal and then we'll see how it goes. And I didn't want to be in that situation, you know, because I was thinking about the security of myself, my family. I would tell them afterwards if I didn't feel great, like with the physio, but obviously it's player, you know, doctor of confidentiality, right? So I'm just saying, listen, this is what it is. I don't have them often, but I could. And he's like, okay, just let me know. But again, it was one of those situations where, because I wanted to play, I didn't want to miss games, I wouldn't really say nothing.
So without throwing anybody under a bus, I think from what I read in Chris Cutmore's interview yesterday and from what you're telling me now, I presume that there were, at a couple of clubs, some people on the medical side who did know, and you were still, like you say, playing games a day after a seizure, for example.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm not going to blame them, because ultimately they're going to say to me, how are you? Are you okay? And, you know, as a player, if I say I'm okay, then I'm going to play. It's like injuries, you know, you do your hamstring or whatnot. If you feel like I can do it, whether they think you should or not, you're still going to go out there and play. They're going to let you play. And that's what it was pretty much for me. I remember that, you know, there was a game when, like I said, I had a seizure the day before, but because it was Arsenal, I wanted to play against Arsenal. I came in the next day, and obviously no one knew about it at the club. And I was just sitting there, but obviously I was sitting there quiet. I wasn't saying nothing. And for me, like, normally, you know, I'm, you know, talking a lot and, you know, having banter, listen to music and whatnot before the game. And I was just sitting there quiet. And people were coming up to me, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine.
Just at Cardiff?
Yeah. You know, I went out there and I played. And I don't know if I had the best game, but I just don't remember the game entirely. I don't remember who was marking me. I don't remember anything. The only way I know is looking back now at pictures. And, you know, my wife was obviously at those games, very worried.
You scored, didn't you?
No.
I'm getting confused.
Was it a burden to you?
It's a difficult question, really. Because I had it in the back of my mind, especially when I knew that I might not have slept well. And then I might have forgot my tablets. That then is when I had it in the back of my mind, because I wasn't thinking, I wasn't fully prepared on the game. I was thinking about, okay, I need to kind of manage this almost. But obviously it's one of those conditions where you can't really manage. If I go out there and I might get hit in the head, or I might be sprinting around the pitch, I might be exhausted, it could happen. Luckily for me, it never did happen on the pitch. And I only had one seizure actually even on training pitch, and that was at the end of my career when I was in Japan. And that is on video. Like, I've got that, and, you know, maybe one day I might, you know, if it's going to help people understand, I might release it to, you know, let people see what a seizure actually looks like. Because some people, it's very private for certain people. People don't want other people to see it, right? So maybe I'll do that in the future, just, you know, to show those people what a seizure is like. And to be fair, the doctors in Japan and the players in Japan were fantastic with me.
Now, there were a couple of incidents where it was, it got quite frightening for you. One of them was when you had a seizure at the wheel of your car while you were playing for Charlton, which led the police to think that you were drunk or under the influence, and you ended up in a police cell on the back of that.
So I was going to see a friend of mine, and, you know, he lived in a close, he had gates, and I was going through, and luckily, obviously, I wasn't going at speed. I was going into a residential area, so I was just going down a hill, and then I had one at the wheel, and I went into the front of this next-door neighbour's house. Obviously I didn't knock down the wall because I wasn't driving fast, but I went into the window and the wall, and obviously the police were called then. And when they came to me, they breathalyzed me, which I can't even remember, to see, like, why is this guy crashed into, you know, someone's wall? Obviously there must be an explanation for it. So they breathalyzed me, no alcohol. Then they flashed a light in my eyes, and obviously they could see my pupils were really dilated. So they must be thinking this, you know, he must be taking drugs. And yeah, they kind of just threw me in the cell. And I remember, like, I went into the cell and I just hit my head against the wall and cracked my head open. And I just remember I was slouched against the wall and I woke up and there was all like blood down my jacket. But because I didn't know exactly what happened, I couldn't really say nothing or report it. You know, I didn't know whether that happened when I had the car crash. All I know is, when I was in the cell, I woke up with blood on me. But then I did speak to my friend and I said to him, you know, was there blood running down my head after the car crash? And he said, no. So obviously I assumed that, you know, when I went in there, and there was blood on the wall as well. So, yeah.
And there was an equally unnerving incident on a pre-season trip with Cardiff in Portugal, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a strange one, to be honest, because we arrived in Portugal. And obviously summertime, it's really hot. We did go out the night before. So I didn't sleep great, but I didn't wake up and I felt like knackered, you know? So we went training, we'd done training, trained hard. A lot of the training when you first get out there is running, it's physical. And I remember I was just walking back just with my boots in my hand, and then all of a sudden, bang, blacked out. And I fell on top of a car. It was, you know, a black car. Obviously, it was in the sun a long time, and it just basically singed all of my arm.
Red hot metal.
Just singed my arm, my thigh, and my calf. Luckily, my shoulder must have been protecting my face, because obviously I had no damage to my face. And then I came round, and I woke up in hospital, and it was just like, what's going on here? How did that happen? The next day, I just got my arm strapped up, and you know, I'm playing football again.
Chris, I know that you have a particularly keen interest in the way that football handles anything to do with the brain, for reasons that we know about. And what strikes me about Jay's story is it doesn't surprise me at all that Jay wanted to carry on playing. He wanted to keep this on the down low for his own reasons. I understand that. But somebody should have spotted something. Someone in football should have spotted something was amiss. Wouldn't you think?
Yes, I mean, what really interests me, and I don't know whether you'd know this, Jay, but there must have been other players playing with epilepsy, or at any level, and sports people playing
like
with epilepsy.
Like, I know Leon Legg has epilepsy, and he's played with it, and he's managed it, so he's had a full career from it. But I'm sure there's many more. But again, it's one of those ones where you don't want to say it, because you love the game, you want to play, you want to have, you know, a full career from something you love doing. And people wouldn't know, because unless you have a seizure, they're not going to ask that question, do you have epilepsy? The question's not even asked. You know, when you go and do a medical, they don't say to you, have you got epilepsy? You know, they'll obviously do the test, you go on a treadmill, you run, you have your heart checks, and you know they look at your knees and your ankles and whatnot. But and even then, like, if you've never had no injuries, they don't even give you a great it's not like a full-blown medical. So the questions never really are. So as much as it sounds like people are not doing their job correctly, it's a lot of me just hiding it, just because I didn't feel comfortable telling people. But as my career went on, I think it's my duty to talk about this, so I can help the youngsters of today. Because loads of times I get asked questions about, if my son or daughter's, you know, got epilepsy. And especially in Japan, they wouldn't even let their kids do PE. They wouldn't let them do any sort of physical activity. So for me, I work with young epilepsy now, and I do a lot of work with them, functions with them. I've got one coming up on the 11th of April at Trent Park in North London, where, you know, the kids are going to come over. We're going to do some football together, have a Q&A. They can ask me questions about what I've done. And to be honest, a lot of my younger years, I didn't treat epilepsy how I should have. My parents didn't know how to deal with that. And for me, I was young, I was arrogant, I knew best, and I just carried on.
Were you ever embarrassed?
Yeah, it is embarrassing, because especially to my kids. I remember I had one when I was in Japan, and we was in the back of a taxi, and we was going somewhere, and it was the first time my eldest son Mace he seen me have a seizure, and he when he came around, he was like really upset, crying, because he was like, I've never seen my dad vulnerable like this before, just weak and just completely out of it. But again, it's, you know, it's my duty to make people aware of this now. So, you know, maybe there's other footballers out there, young footballers, and I know there's one in particular, I won't mention his name, but even him, they're like iffing and biting whether to give him a contract because he's got this condition, because a lot of people don't know how to handle it. And it is scary to see. You know, when I look back at that incident that was videoed in Japan, when I see it, it's like, that was the first time I've seen myself have a seizure. So I was like, bloody hell, you know, it is scary. I can understand now the way people would view that, especially if they haven't seen it before.
Your football camp, Jay, is that full up, or are there places for kids who can come along to or how do they do that if they want?
Yeah, they can come along.
Where would they find the details for that?
Yeah, online, young Epilepsy online, on my social media. I'm posting it everywhere now.
Okay, right.
People can come down, kids from, you know, 6 to 11, 12. To be honest, anyone can come down, because I think it's important, if they've got questions to ask, they should ask me. I'm the person firsthand that I'm willing to talk about it and, you know, give my experiences, because there's a lot of scared boys and girls out there that are afraid to talk about it.
So if you just to repeat, if you're interested, if you get any questions that you want to ask Jay on the back of what he's so bravely talked about today, if you want to get along to that training camp, follow Jay on his socials, you'll get all the details there. Equally, if you think you are affected by anything that we've talked about today, you can go to Epilepsy UK, which is www.epilepsy.org.uk. There's a lot of information there about this condition. Jay, what we should stress is that you're fit and well, as you sit here today, you're on your medication.
That's important. I want to say that there's
no seizures now.
No, there's different strains of epilepsy. And obviously that's something that you have to work out. For me, I take 250 milligrams of lamotrigine twice a day, so morning and night. And that's helped a lot, you know, and I don't feel groggy or drowsy. You know, I just, you know, function like anyone else would now. It's the days that, you know, you go out and you feel really tired. Jet lag for me is a problem sometimes. So for me, I have to take sleeping tablets when I travel, especially long haul flights to like LA or Japan. That can be a problem sometimes where you're not sleeping much. But again, it's one of the cases where I just have to manage it from my point of view. But again, there's different strains, and, you know, the doctor and the specialist will obviously advise those people differently to what I've been advised.
Absolutely. Each case is different, of course. Jay is also a very, very keen and, by the sounds of it, quite talented golfer. Plays off a handicap of 7, although Chris did did squeeze out of him that there was a 0.8 attached to that. So he's playing off 8, really. Yeah. But he's made the effort to come in this morning. So if he says he's off 7, he's off 7.
We're just jealous.
Yeah, absolutely. With that in mind, Jay also hosts a golf-related podcast, the Out of Bounds Show, which talks about golf, talks about a bit of music, talks about a bit of football. You can find him there as well. Jay, thanks for coming in today.
Pleasure.
Mate. You've opened our eyes to a subject that we knew nothing about, and we do appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Big thanks to Jay for being with us today. We really do appreciate all that he had to tell us about his really unusual football story. Right, let's have some moments of the weekend, and you can go first.
Right, well, my two moments of the week, really, and being quick off the mark. The first moment, Florian Wirtz for Germany scored after 7 seconds against France, but he was beaten by Christoph. He didn't remember his second name. Okay, just going to have to turn over a page. Christoph Baumgartner, who scored after 6 seconds for Austria, climb any mountain, against Slovakia, straight from kickoff. I mean, that's sort of under 10 stuff, isn't it? But 6 seconds, I've scored after 12 seconds in a game. But 6 is unbelievable from kickoff. Little Maisie run and pop one past Dubravka.
Yeah.
I mean, 6 seconds, 7 seconds, that's amazing.
You mentioned the Germany game. They beat France comfortably. Kai Havertz scoring again. French were booed off. Just shows that some of our rivals for the summer tournament are not in the best of shape. And another reason to be optimistic, which is why it's good that we lost. We'll just keep it down. Now, my moment of the weekend is just reminds everybody there was some EFL taking place over the weekend. So we remember, don't we, that last year's National League promotion tussle was epic between Wrexham and Notts County. Went all the way to the wire. Wrexham eventually got there first. Notts County came up through the playoffs. They beat Chesterfield in the playoff final. Well, this year, it's been different. Paul Cook's Chesterfield are up already. They are 21 points ahead of second place Barnet at the top of Nations League. Chesterfield have been out of the EFL for 6 years, and now they've got a position back in League Two. Paul Cook, their manager, was emotional, as you would expect, because it was also that game was also on the second anniversary of his late father's passing. And that is a terrific way to make up for the disappointment of last season, isn't it? Heck of a season.
Yep, good manager, Paul Cook. A few signings in the summer. Will Grigg's
on fire.
Yeah, he scored a lot of goals for them this season. And it's good to see them, bounce back.
Yeah, the thing is, I was looking through some of the lower tiers of the pyramid, and you see some of the once established Football League clubs who've just got lost down there and are further down the pyramid and may never come back. So when a team like this does, just like Stockport have come back and they're doing incredibly well, it's heartening. I just think that when you have a playoff disappointment and you get so close, then you fall away, it's hard to come again at it next year. Mansfield are doing it in League Two. They look like they might finally get up this time, Nigel Clough, but they've struggled from that point of view. And Chesterfield have had a bit of that. Paul Cook's been around, did a good job at Wigan under difficult circumstances.
Tough time at Ipswich.
Yeah, and he's Chesterfield are back up. So well played to them this Sunday. The Premier League returns, and what a way to return. I'm not a huge fan of football on Easter Sunday, not for religious grounds, just because I do think there are times when everybody needs a day off. But I have to say, if you're going to have football on Easter Sunday, then what a way to do it. Arsenal at Manchester City, another huge Premier League game. Chris and I will be back on Thursday to talk about that and a lot more. The Premier League is back, so join us on Thursday for that. And remember, please, to be back here for this version of the show next Monday. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Please remember, whether you're a Spotify listener, Apple Podcast devotee, hit the subscribe button, leave some comments, let us know what you think. I am Ian Lederman. The chap to my left with his tartan socks on is Chris Sutton, and this has been It's All Kicking Off.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.